do so. And tonight we I'm here with Lila.
Good evening, folks.
And we got our buddy George Dixon joining us pretty soon. And tonight we're going to talk about what we've been talking about for a while. But we're coming close. Next week we'll be we'll be in the ninth wave.
Oh, is it actually next week?
Yeah, it's the fifth. It's on the ninth, actually.
Really?
And
I didn't know it was happening so soon.
I believe it's called the ninth wave.
That's yeah. Right.
Yeah. And what's going to happen is we're going to see a tremendous change in things coming in into play, and leading us right through to October, which will when we see the tremendous change in everything. We'll be beginning the seventh day, universal period. Entered the universal period, and where we become co-creators. Okay, with the according to the Mayan calendar. So, I think overall, I think we're going to be quite. I'm hoping we're going to be enlightened. Okay, tonight with kind of an understanding again of the ninth wave, as well as the what to expect here next week.
Mm-hmm.
All right, coming. George is on the line. Hello, George. Are you with us?
Yeah, I am. Good evening, Leo.
Hi, George. How are you?
Well, okay, I'm fine, Lila. It's just a little late start here.
Yeah,
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
That's okay. Just a minute or two. That's all right.
Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you here.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, it's...
Leo was just saying that next week we enter the ninth wave. Is that it?
Yes, that's right.
Wow,
we've been talking
happened.
About this for a while now, and it's finally upon us.
I know. All of a sudden, we talked about it for so long, and it's next week. I can't believe it.
Well, I think it's on Tuesday. It's not that far from here.
From
us.
Today or Wednesday, I'm not sure. But
well, today's the 4th.
So 5 days from now.
Mm-hmm.
It is Wednesday, I think. Somewhere like that.
Yeah.
All right. So... that's exciting, George. We're all going to change into enlightened beings at that moment. But,
I don't think so. Other than
I don't know. Hey, you know, one more week away, it's worth hanging on to, you know.
it's a shift.
Yeah, it's definitely a shift.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit of a shift for all of us, I guess, huh?
But you know, I was getting into this book, this one that you lent me, You Are a Spiritual Being, Having a Human Experience.
That's
right. I read parts of it last night on the show, and but I guess what got me, what always grabbed me, because I read this twice now, this book, and keeps getting more interesting to me. It says, the universe as a whole comprises an enormous number of levels of dimensions of being, and each dimension possessing its own kind of reality, and each being an expression of a different kind of consciousness, and dimensions overlap. But it says, our present-day human life is not only in the third dimension. We are also living on the second level of consciousness. And I will explain the different levels of consciousness. He goes into it, but... maybe, you know, we are already living in the fourth dimensional, or let's say the higher overtone of the third dimension anyway.
Yes.
And I believe we'll probably be moving right into the fourth dimension within the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain maybe...
I'll make it simple. The fourth dimension is like the dream state, the subconscious state.
Yeah.
It's a dream state, but it's a conscious state where you're aware of it, and you're not restricted by time or space. So you can do anything or think anything, and, you know, you will be able to see anything.
Let me explain,
I think, with the ninth wave. It's a unity consciousness. We are going into a unity consciousness mode. And with that, we are living the third and the fourth dimension. And the fourth dimension, being, having no time involved or no time attached to it. So it's like instant. It's an instant thing.
Let me ask you this, George. The Aborigine people of Australia, they value the dream state and the altered consciousness. They think that's... Are they already on the fourth dimension?
Well, they are on a state of... If you want to go back, the last time we were in a full mode of consciousness like this probably goes back hundreds of thousands of years. It's a consciousness like insects have, where they're all connected. They're all connected to the one source.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Aborigine people, I think I've explained this before, that you know they live in a dream state, which is they all connected in a dream state understanding. It's not like they have to learn something. If they need to know something, what they do is they tap into this dream state, which is like a flowing stream.
Mm-hmm.
And if they need to know anything, it's right there in the stream, and they just take what they need. You know, I'm losing my explanation here. If they need to know something, what they do is they tap into this fourth dimensional stream, which is not restricted by time and space, and they would know, they would learn it, they would understand everything. Just like if they want to learn how to play the flute, what they do is they would think about themselves in the stream, and automatically they would know how to do it because their ancestors before them knew it. And their ancestors do live in this stream of unconsciousness. Now, we are going to a consciousness which is going to be our reality. And whatever.
Well, he also mentions this, Frizzell in this book mentions this about the Aborigines, but he says that if they wanted to, like, let's say there was a power or a meeting that they had to attend, they could actually move back into time and experience and learn that from what became of that meeting without actually having been there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was amazing that they could actually
move back and forth into time
and experience whatever it is they need from in that dream state that they talk about.
We have that ability, just like if we need to know something. And let's say if you need to know something about George Washington, what we're able to do now is think of George Washington on a dollar bill. And everything about George Washington is in that witness, if you want to call it that. So we can gather the information from that thought, and that would become the understanding we're looking for. But in the fourth state, now we're in a state right now that we're going to, if we wanted to learn about George Washington, we would look at a dollar bill, but we would become part of that dollar bill and become part of George Washington's life. So it's not just thinking about it, it's actually being part of it. And that is the move that we're going to right now. In this ninth wave, we will have that ability to think and become whatever we think. And, well, it's more so at the end of this time where we become co-creators of the creation of life. And that is the state that we're in now.
Wow. So we're really looking forward to a time where, you know, we'll manifest anything we desire.
Will we be like the Aborigines living in the three-dimensional state? Also, and the Aborigines live hand to mouth in the three-dimensional state.
See, the advantages we would have is that we would not only think and tap into that reality, we would become part of that reality. Just like if we wanted to know about George Washington, we could become part of George Washington. And this is not a thought form. This is actually the actual George Washington itself. So that is the state that we're going into right now. But there's only one problem here. Everything we do think is going to manifest itself. And I just take a look at the world news, you know, where we are consciously and what's happening. Everything, all our thoughts are manifesting themselves. And, I don't know where to start with this, but, you know, you take a look at Charlie Sheen and what's going on with him. I mean, it brings up so many different things, and yet it is being played out in front of our eyes.
Well, I think, what grabbed me tonight, actually, catching it for the last few months, but the uprising in the Middle East, the same commitment of these people to the revolution is remarkable. And each time they interview each one of them, they say we will I'm ready to fight to the death. I'm ready to die to for my freedom. I'm ready to die to overthrow this person or to so that my country can be free. And it's that incredible commitment to the point of staking your life, okay, on this issue.
That's what people do who join the military.
Or on this vision. That's part of it, but this is a revolution. These are revolutions going on, and not state sponsored. All right, so it's like you're not in the military. You're
well, I'm just saying that people who join the military, the unwritten part of that is yes, you may lose your life.
Right, but in this case, they're willing to give up their lives, okay, for the freedom. For their own freedom, for the freedom of their government or their country and their people. But it's like, that, I guess you could call it fanaticism, but it's that tremendous commitment that also creates you have to have that commitment in order to change. In other words, what Gandhi says is you have to become the change that you wish for, okay? In other words, you have to be that committed, and you have to change yourself, okay? And I think that's where we're headed, George. I think whatever we are most committed to is what we become, and it'll just manifest itself that much faster in the next week, in the next 10 months, or so. And
well, this has been building for a while now, but
absolutely. But now that this change is upon us, this ninth wave or this collapse rather of space and time, things are happening so fast. I mean, who would have thought that Egypt would have collapsed inside of a month, okay?
Let me stop for a minute and first of all say, if there's any callers out there that want to partake in this conversation, call up and we'd love to have you join us. But let's take a look at understanding Holy Jihad. Jihad is it's like the second coming of Christ, and basically that's what they believe in. And the Holy Jihad, the Holy War, is not it could be a bloody war. It could be a war that ends the unrightfulness of the earth. And in order for that to happen, it has to come to the surface. And, it's not only Egypt, it's Libya, and I'm sure there's a few other states in the Islamic world that are rebelling against the powers to be. But understand, for that to happen, they have to join together or connect, that holy thought that they've been praying for the last 1,000 years to manifest itself. So if nothing else, in order for it to come to the surface, it has to have a place to express itself, and that is against all tyranny and all government. It's surprisingly how it is happening. But the Islamic states are rising.
Oh, they are. Yeah. And not only that, if you look at what's happening in Wisconsin and Ohio and everywhere, even in Iraq right now. There's a sweeping movement of radicalism.
I don't think it's radicalism. It's people recognizing that there's a class war going on in this country.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Or it's the consciousness that's been building for years and even centuries has got to manifest itself, just like the belief in the second coming of Christ. You know, people have been believing this for years, and it's got to happen. But first of all, you got to lay down the properties for it to happen to with. And you know, our country is just another example that you know the negative aspect of our society has got to come to the surface and finally crush itself.
Mm-hmm.
Cut me. You see, we've been talking about the seventh day coming, where we would be experiencing the flowering of our thoughts, or the good thoughts that we put in motion, and the old ways, the old governments, the old things that are no good are falling. And if you take a look, you know, the energy crisis, you know, that's coming to a halt. Our government, our medical establishment, this is all coming to an end. But it's got to end, and that end is a crisis that we're seeing now. In order for it to start anew, because the newness of what we're experiencing, what we've experienced in the last couple of years, has been that newness that we're hoping and we're driving ourselves to. Now let me say something. Let me read something. October 28th in 2011 will be the time when all the strings that brought us to this point in time and evolvement of consciousness will be cut off, and we will be free from all outside influences. So in order for us to experience a new consciousness, we have to put to sleep or put to death the old way of doing things. And, you know, when you have a radical attachment to it, you know, it's going to manifest itself too. And a lot of people, the understanding of the second coming, that is going to come soon, and that will happen.
So what do you envision if, say, for instance, in healthcare, you're saying that the old has to die and a new will rise? What kind of new thing do you envision?
Oh, geez, I don't know. Anything could happen. You know, you take a look at our technology, where we are now. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked over a while about nanotechnology. I mean, mm-hmm. we can build machines that go into the body and rebuild the body, rebuild the DNA. And,
right.
you know, we have that ability. It's now applying it and adapting it to our way of living. You know, yeah, yes, we do have this technology, but we also have the technology ourselves to do it ourselves by just thought. By thinking things, we can change. We can change our world. We can change the physical world around us. It's like water. Water is an energizer, and water has a consciousness. And all we have to do is direct that consciousness to do certain things. Instead of having a machine to do it, we can do it ourselves. And that's what we're going to. I mean, the medical establishment, I don't want to pull the strings on that right now, but, you know, you take a look at take a look at the financial empire. See what's happening there. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's not that it may fall. It has fallen. And right now, we're trying to hold on to our chair while it slows down and comes to an end. And it will be of time soon, and I really feel before October that, you know, this monetary system will be changed. But before it changes, expose itself. And, you know, we've talked about this for years now, that things are happening with the world, with the money world, the bankers and so forth. But in order for it to change, it's going to come to the surface. I am really impressed how that has come to the surface in the last 6 months with, you know, the monetary flow of money, what is money, and the banking system, because that has all changed.
Changed how, would you say? When, just recently?
Well.
Or over the last couple of years?
No, it's happened over the last couple of years, but our way of doing business, we don't need a dollar bill, if you'd want to call it that, because we don't use a dollar anymore. We use the electrons on a magnetic strip of credit cards. And, you know, that is our ledger in the book, if you'd want to call it that. where money is actually a physical expression of what that is, but the bank card is an electronic expression of a ledger in a book. So,
yeah,
you know,
most people find money to be a nuisance now. They'd rather have a credit card.
Yeah, that's ludicrous, isn't it?
Uh-huh. It's crazy. Just crazy.
What do you think, Leo?
I think it's great. I think we're headed toward something remarkable.
No, we're talking about money.
No, money-wise, too. I think we're at a point where money will become irrelevant.
That's what I was just saying.
Yeah,
people would much rather have a credit card. They don't want money.
Yeah.
I think it's irrelevant now because...
I don't think anybody wants a credit card either. You don't want to owe interest on what you're buying. But the key is to, not have money, not have currency, just everything be free,
That's not going to happen right now.
No, and that's not going to happen. But, you take a look at our government, what's happening there. It's
but
the question.
But, everything, though it's not free, everything has to be equalized somehow. I mean communism and blah, blah, blah. But, there has to be some equanimity.
Well, for instance, when you listen to the people in Washington, they want to balance the budget by stealing...
From the middle class and the poor.
Social Security, and they call that entitlements, but what people don't want to accept is we paid into that.
Yeah.
We're entitled to it because we paid money into it.
Right.
But understand that money has been used to do other things, just like Ronald Reagan was able to tap into the Social Security Fund to offset the deficit. But understand that is an illusion. The whole government thing is an illusion because it is all attached to the monetary value of money. And that's what's happening. In order for the money, the money is breaking down, but our financial system is responsible for our way of living, our laws. And, you take away this money, and it's going to affect the way we govern our people. And that is what's happening right now, where the money is losing, has lost its value, but the government, our form of government is changing because it is attached to that money. And just common law, I've said before, we don't have a common law anymore.
Everybody has central banks. Nobody's money has any value.
Even
communist countries have central banking. China has central banking. Nobody's currency is backed by anything. It has no value. The American dollar is attached to a barrel of oil. That's why it has value.
Right, and that value is shrinking every day for some reason. I
don't really understand that piece of it, I've decided.
Well, because the speculation is going up, and everybody's bidding on oil.
And Obama is allowing that to happen.
Right. So.
And I'm not sure what his agenda is that he's allowing that to happen. That should not be allowed to happen at all.
I don't think he can do anything about it. That's the problem. I mean, the president of the United States is virtually
powerless.
Is powerless. He's impotent.
He's just a decorative figure.
The power is in Congress, all right, and Congress is ruled by corporations. So and the elite, the huge money trusts. And, so the president of the United States is virtually a token
figurehead.
He's
just a figurehead now.
And useless, as we can see. So it's like, I think you're seeing the end of it. I hate to say it, the end of the system. Okay.
It's not that simple, Leo.
It's not that simple.
Just like the president, if nothing else. He's really the head CEO of America. He's just a figurehead of a capital type of society that we've established.
Yeah.
That is the illusion that's falling apart because of the money situation. The money basically shows a structure, but that structure is an illusion. Now, the laws are solid, just like the Constitution. It's been suspended for years. And the reason why is because we are in bankruptcy. We're in bankruptcy in 1933 when we were declared bankrupt in the First Depression. Again, we were established in 1950, the bankruptcy law. And later on, I believe in the 70s it happened. But what happens is in bankruptcy, well, we turn everything over to another party. And that's what we have right now, like the Social Security. That is a tax, and that's become a tax. But that is taken from a pool of money, but it's not a pool of money. It's a pool of figures in a ledger book that makes it, its value. Like I said before, the dollar has no value. The value of a dollar has changed because in the 60s, we took away the ability to attach ourselves to the monetary value of, let's say, gold and silver. That's why we came off the gold standards.
But we put ourselves on, but we backed the dollar by oil. Yeah. And
No, we didn't, Leo. See,
we became the reserve currency for the world. And that's what we are. But the rest of the world now is trying to get out from under us, but that ain't gonna happen. Because the whole concept of quantitative easement, which was the Bernanke's new idea, was to unload millions of trillions and trillions more dollars into the economies, okay, creating inflation, okay, and bringing down the value of the dollar, devaluating the dollar so that it would allow for more exports, you know, it would allow for more commerce and everything for the United States. And every time, that's why China has constantly manipulated its currency and kept it low,
artificially low, yeah.
Right? Because that way it creates more income for, or more industry, I should say, for their country and their people.
That's the illusion that I'm talking about. That's not real. That's not true. If we need more money, what we do is
what's going on. I mean, what's going on is that we have managed to devalue our own currency, all right, by putting putting so much of it out there.
No value, Leo. It's just a ledger in a book.
I know that.
Yes.
But it's the big ledger, I guess. All right. So I mean, I don't know. All I know is that I got a dollar in my pocket and it can't buy today what it did yesterday. All right.
If somebody will be willing to take that dollar for what you're looking for.
Well, you know, I just saw yesterday. The other day, $10 could buy me almost 3 gallons of gas. Today, it can only buy me 2.5. All right. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, that's what's happened. I mean, as prices of oil, or prices of gas, prices of food, prices of everything, you know, go up, that dollar bill goes down, you know, in value. So,
I don't want to get caught in this merry-go-round that we can with the value of money, but I'm just saying, over a number of years, it's come worthless, and it is worthless. All it is just an expression of a thought. And that is so much money. If we need, let's say, $1 billion, you know, we can't just print up $1 billion and put it in motion and call it value, because it has no value. The only value is a ledger in a book. But my point was that our government, our form of government, is attached to money. And if you expose the money for what it is, it's going to change things. And I think right now what's happening in Wisconsin and other states around the country, that, you know, people are learning these things and understanding these things, and this illusion is exposing itself. And I think understanding the law itself, we don't have a constitutional law in our jails, excuse me, we don't have constitutional law being practiced in our courts. It's all a military type of law, that is a problem that we've been dealing with. I think we talked about this before when it comes to the American flag. If you look at the flag and look at the gold fringe upon it, you see that's an admiralty flag or a military flag, and that is a military war flag. That shows that's a surrender flag. And ever since we declared bankruptcy, we have been, that is basically a treaty that we have with these outside sources who are claiming the money. And
well, these are the bankers. These are the banks, the Federal Reserve.
No, they're not the bankers. The bankers have to they use that, but it's the government itself.
No, see, who do we owe our money to?
Who do we owe money to?
Yeah.
Well, it was it was
the bankers.
Well, the bankers are the people that hold title to you know, our property. And what we
That's
did
right.
do is we turned over the title of our property to somebody else in return to pay a debt.
That's right. Now, and we still didn't pay our debt. Right?
Oh, no.
We'll continue
to pay. And understand that the IRS and the Federal Reserve System is all part of that system. And that's what's coming to an end.
It's a collection arm for the Federal Reserve.
But
it has nothing to do with our government. You know,
it's not the Federal Reserve. It's the International Monetary Fund. Because the Bretton Woods agreement back in the 30s, what's happening now, and, you know, I've noticed here with the Bush administration, there was a change in the Treasury Department. And understand the Treasury Department was the Treasury Department that we've grown up to learn about. That basically was the word or the mouthpiece for the International Monetary System, because basically they're at the collector of this debt and this bankruptcy I'm talking about. And the IRS is a collector's of debt, even though, you know, to a constitutional understanding, you know, the taxes are voluntary, but they're not voluntary. They go right to the people who hold the title on our property and our land and are part of this bankruptcy proceedings. Ever since the 30s.
What's really weird is that the United States owns 51% control of the IMF. We control 51% of the IMF, the United States, all right, and also the World Bank, all right, and so the United States is fully committed to those organizations since they.
Where do you come with 51%?
No,
what makes you say that?
Well, I've read this that the United States owns 51% of the IMF. It's our baby, all right?
I don't think so, Leo.
50%?
Understand that that's like the World Bank and the International Monetary System.
The World Bank has always had an American as the head of it. The last guy was Wolfowitz, and the last guy before him was McNamara, and I don't even know who the hell it is now, but I think it's another American, all right? They've always had an American at the head of the World Bank, all right. And the IMF is, you know, that they are controlled by the United States as well, all right. So all these monies that are going out, I mean, we, you know, what makes you laugh is these monies. We wound up giving mortgages to these countries, okay, bailing them out or giving them big loans. And then what happens is we sell it. When they can't make it, we make the loan payments. We foreclose on them, and by selling out their assets to the their resources, natural resources to corporations, and that's how it works.
We had so many big foreign loans to pay.
Right. In fact, it was John Perkins. Who wrote the Confessions of an Economic Hitman. We interviewed him. And
that's exactly what he said.
He was the guy who would go to these countries or go to these places and talk to them, the leaders of these countries, and tell them that the IMF will give them a whole bunch of money, bail them out. But
give them a payoff.
Yeah, exactly. Give the heads of the state a payoff to do it. And then they would attach their resources. They would expect them to default. And
I'd like to move away from the snake pit because, you know, we can go on and on about this, but understand the point was it's one big illusion. And it was America and also with England.
Pretty rotten stinking business is what it is. And you know, in the United States...
It'd be great if that collapses. I think it's a terrible thing.
But the United States is one of the biggest dirty, rotten guys in the, you know, playing out there, all right? And... you know, our governments have been in collusion with all the dictators, all the third
the
world,
international
and they've
criminals.
Kept the third world because that way they can exploit them, you know, and you know,
sort of what they did to the indigenous people here.
Yeah,
well,
they're making a mistake.
Let me finish my thought, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
Our banking system is connected with the English banking system, and yet we are just not only a mouthpiece, but we're also a part of the international monetary system or the larger corporations that run this world. You know, China has a lot of our commitments, and that's in bonds and so forth that we put out there, U.S. savings bonds. They bought them up. And, you know, the United States has to back some of that, or most of that. And that has to be backed with something of value. If not gold and silver, it's property. So, you know, gold and silver are property. The Chinese now could foreclose on our land because they have the notes or the money that they've invested in us to secure that. But, you know, you take a look at what's going on in the world. How we got involved with Libya, we are just a mouthpiece for the large corporation. A large corporation says, here, I want to do this, and I want you to do it because you have the facilities and the manpower to do it. And that's why we are like the police of the world. But what we have is we've committed ourselves to something much larger, and that is part of the IMF for the International Control of Monetary System. But, you know, let's not get lost with this in the sense that it's all been an illusion. It's all coming to the surface. And what isn't real is being expressed or exploded or expressed openly. And
the new alliance that's going to happen, and someone who came on our show said this, and I agree with them 100%, is that China and the United States are going to be the two new superpowers, and we need each other.
Right. I mean, we're already linked at the hip, you know.
And we're going to be further linked. And the new alignment will be China and the United States against Europe. Europe has no land to grow things on. They don't have
China
enough.
and the Russians, not the United States.
No, China and the United States, not China and Russia.
I know that's what you said, but I'm saying the real powers, I think, is the Eastern Bloc. And China, you know, it's hard to say that the Chinese they can match our population by military personnel. That is scary.
Oh yeah, it's a huge country, but they need us. We keep their economy going just as they keep ours going.
Well, they need somebody to take their goods. Yeah, but the
symbiotic.
Money goes back to them, or
That's
the value
right.
goes back to them.
It's a symbiotic relationship.
But at the same time, you know. They have the worst air pollution in the world, water pollution, everything, because we are saying we can't afford to have that kind of pollution here anymore.
So we're putting
so
your put country.
It over in your country, okay? You build this crap. You gag your own people. You destroy your land, destroy your water, and ours
it's
is
easy
to build ours, you know. And that's basically what's going on. I mean.
And that's exactly what happened in the old industrial revolution here.
Yeah.
England exported all their problems here.
Yeah, because England was a dying country. I mean, they had and they needed new markets. They needed a new place to expand.
Well, they needed another place where they can dirty without dirting their own self.
That's right. And our country is
based on their model, George.
I mean, that's what China is all about right now, and it's like, you know, let's filthy up China, let them be the industrial pit of the world. We can be the service and financial, you know, experts.
Entertainment industry. We're the entertainment industry.
Yeah, so we don't have to get our hands dirty anymore. Let's just retool, retrain our people, and you know, we'll no longer have to deal with soiling our hands on.
Somebody had to back China in order to build up his manufacturing business, and that was the Japanese. See, after World War II, we agreed with them that you can't keep what you produce. You can produce, but you can't keep what you make. So what they do is they take their products, they sell to us, they get the money, then they invest in China. So understand that the Chinese Empire has been financed or backed by the Japanese, who couldn't use it to build more power plants and build up industry. They couldn't do that again. So, where does it go? So we give the money to the Chinese, they build the factories, the money they make and their profits they give to the Japanese. So it just changes hands. And that's what it's all about.
What is when you think that Goldman Sachs is probably one of the major biggest investors in China right now worldwide, you got to ask yourself why. Right?
Hotchkiss School is filled with Chinamen.
Hotchkiss School up here is all full of Chinamen. So it's like in a prep school, but it's like you have to understand, I guess, that. This is where it's headed. This is what's happening, and it's a diversion of industry because industry pollutes. That's what happens.
What's not going to happen after the diversion's been diverted? What will happen?
I don't know.
That's what we're experiencing right now. It's got to fall. It's got to come to an end, and new will begin. Out of the newness will come after this crisis. But this is the. Last portion of the crisis or the change that's taken place. And after this, then we could build a new society or a new way of doing things. And that is part of, this seventh day or the ending of this ninth wave. And that basically is October of this year. But right now, we are experiencing not only the ending of, the good things in life or what we believe is real for the new stuff or the new life or the new understanding. And, who the hell is going to buy a car when all you got to do is think of going from here to there and you're instantly there? Or, building your own craft in your own mind, mentally, doing something. We don't need no stinking cars,
I know what you're saying, George, but by this time next year, we won't be, we'll be, by this time next year, we'll be in 2012. All right. And by then, I mean, we should be flying around in
Merkabas.
In our Merkabas, yeah. From here to there. I think that this dimensional shift takes place in the next year. It's going to be a remarkable time. I mean, we're just going to be.
It's not next year. It's now. What's happening now is that shift and change. But in order for us to change, we have to drop and put aside old ways of living. That's what's happening.
I understand, but I think it's leading up to that time because we're not there quite yet. All right, but
we will
be there very, very, very soon. And
I think we are right now.
What's that?
I think we are right now, but we have the residue of the old way that's attaching itself to us that we have to get rid of.
I haven't been able to transcend from the third dimension to the fourth dimension, especially physically. All right, physically, I'm still rooted down here, But I'm hoping that that this ascension.
But do you feel
also bring our not have to separate us from our bodies, but will allow us to ascend as a body.
So what way have you changed, George, that you've already made the change?
Well, I haven't already made the change. I am making the change. I think in my way of living, and the things that I do, it's like banking. I bank a little bit different than I did before, but it's purchasing things. It's like purchasing fruit. Normally, the fruit that I can buy in my supermarket doesn't come from America. It comes from South America. And it's because the growing of these fruits and vegetables are from that area. And, it's something that has changed, but, it hasn't changed my way of eating fruit. But the fruit is different. That is a change that I'm talking about, but it's a very subtle type of a change. But this change that we're experiencing now is not subtle. And this change, like what's happening with politics out of Wisconsin, is part of that change that I'm talking about. That is changing. I mean, that is spreading like wildfire. And I think.
Yeah, but the reason, and this is the sad part.
What about the reason, Leo?
What?
Who cares about the reason?
Well, there has to be a reason in order for it to have erupted. All right.
But let me turn it one way. Understanding the ego, understanding the mind. Now we've been talking about the polarity of consciousness, where you have the mental state and emotional state. This ninth wave is part of the unified understanding, where we combine not only the mental, but we mend with the emotional body. Now, the mental body we've been in for many, many years, and that is we do things with our mind. And if you want to call our mind anything, you can call it ego or superego. But understand that is stripped from the emotional body. What we're doing now is going back to the emotional body and not only incorporating that, but the ninth wave will incorporate the dream state, let's say, of the emotional body. If you feel like doing something, you're going to do it. That is a change that we're going through, and it's not going to abolish our ego. What it's doing is it's going to integrate our ego with our emotions, and we would express ourselves in a feeling, or a feeling would be basically how we express ourselves in the world. And, you know, it's funny how this emotional body for years now, 12,000 years, we've been thinking with our mind, and everything is related to the mind of the ego. And the ego is not everything that is. I mean, from the Eastern philosophy, people have been talking about the ego, or keeping the ego down, and not using the ego. That way, we can control the energies of the body, like the Eastern yogi believe. They attach itself to energies, like the kundalini. But now understand that kundalini is attached to the emotional body of the heart itself. So now it's tapping in to that emotional part of us, which is attached to the outside and expressing ourselves or living ourselves. So, you know, this is a big change that we're going through, and it's like the ascension of consciousness. The ascension of consciousness is not from not going up to a higher level. It is, but it's in the body itself, our way of thinking. We're ascending back into our heart, and the heart basically is the attachment, the emotional body, that attaches itself to the world. It's the sun, or it's the energies of the world that is adapted and used and held together by the heart, not the mind. And it's the heart that designates where the energy goes or where our life force flows.
Hmm.
Still there?
Yeah, I was just trying to absorb what you said.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to some of these shows on Blog Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything has been so attached to the ego this and the ego that. I'm not saying that the ego, focusing on the ego, is wrong. I'm just saying there is a point where enough is enough. But understand that we don't have to now focus on the ego. We have to focus on the interaction or the integration of the ego with the body. And now we have the power. I talked about nuclear monotechnology. Nanotechnology, that's like an ego or a mental thing. Now we don't need that. The emotional body can produce the same results. So instead of having to build something to express something, we can do it ourselves just by thinking that. And that's what I'm saying in this period right now, what we think is going to manifest itself. And this is something that's been building for the last couple of years. And, you know, it's funny, I remember back in 2008, I talked about, you know, having glasses. On the inside of the glasses, you could build or you could have like a computer screen that, you know, you can be on the computer while you're walking. And sure enough, within 3 months, you know, these things were on the market. They're very expensive. But, you know, it's something, it's a thought. Thoughts manifest themselves. And, you know, instead of, well, it's like Robbie the Robot. that, you know, that was an illusion, but it's not an illusion. It's something that manifests itself. And the idea of going to the moon, you know, it's something that was mentally thought of, first of all, and then
it began in somebody's mind.
Interaction.
No, this is what I was trying to say about the commitment of these people in the Middle East, also the commitment of the people in the Midwest. And,
yes, but
you know,
but you've got to complete what you started. And what I'm saying is that I really
will.
Just
they will. That this is no doubt. I mean, when people are ready to die, all right, or go to jail, or whatever it is, for their belief, okay. And to create this movement, okay, or to create this thing.
And create a better living for
right.
L people,
then
not just
happens.
For themselves.
Like, you know, like you take a Martin Luther King. You know, Martin Luther King saw the civil rights movement. He saw this whole thing.
He said, I had a dream.
Yeah. And
that's
his dream
what he
was to see
about.
These people. And we're seeing it today. Unfortunately, he wasn't there, but he foresaw his own death. All right, but
the minute he recognized that I had a dream was for poor people, white and black. That's when they killed him.
That's right. Because
of the Martin Luther King
was trying to organize
everyone
right.
against the global elite.
That's right.
And they couldn't allow him to live.
That's right.
It's also a completion of a thought or a belief. It's the
what?
Completion of it. It's not something that started. It's something that's completed itself. Just
God,
like over in the Middle East, this is a holy ending is got to come to the surface, and that's what's happening.
Of other people,
That thought began with Gandhi.
Yeah, but it actually began the civil disobedience with Henry Thoreau,
mm-hmm.
right? And that inspired everybody in the last 200 years, okay, to fight against the system, all right? Christ didn't say to fight against the system. He said, give Caesar what Caesar's, and, you know. So
render it to God what is God's.
Right.
We don't need that system.
Well, I'm sorry?
We don't need that system.
Well,
you're right, we don't, and that's what people are saying.
We don't need
a system of corporations
and thieves and criminals.
Thieves
and oppression and slavery. We don't need that. We don't want that. And for that, people have suffered and died for those causes, okay, to oppose them. And it's that, you know, gives reins true to the millions of people in those movements.
But what you have to do is detach from that, Leo. Detach from that thought. How do you do
why?
That?
Why? I appreciate that thought. Why does he have to detach from it? That's part of unity consciousness we're talking about. I mean, the unity consciousness of people.
Is your house is part of that attachment.
No, people
what you
believing
have,
business.
What you own is part of that attachment because you don't own it.
We own it. We all own those.
No, we don't own it.
You don't own it?
We don't own it, no.
What do you mean?
It's like our legal system right now. You don't own your house or your car. It's owned by the state.
No, but you own your thought. And you own yourself.
But
right?
I'm going
you
back to the idea. How do you change that?
Property,
you change that by changing the system. But understand, the system that you're in right now, you have to back away from and convert it into this other way of living. But in the meanwhile, you know, the banks may be an illusion, but the people behind those banks want theirs. And what's theirs is basically the value or the property that they hold. Like America, we don't own property. We're all tenants. And that is part of this government, and that is part of the banking system, where we've given up our right to hold property for the banking system that we use. And like I was saying before, how do you back away from, let's say, the old system? You back away from it by not using the banks. But in the meanwhile, the banks should have the money that you normally pay, you know, for that property or the property that's theirs.
Well,
so you just can't walk away from it.
But I mean,
and you have to walk away from it because it's not yours.
Yeah, if the bank gives you $100,000 and you buy a house for $100,000, the bank still owns it until you pay it off. But the, you know,
but Leo,
if you
understand that the ownership of that bank is different. Like the banks, when you get a mortgage from a bank, what you do is you take your money, which is hard sweat earned money that you worked, and give it to the banks, and they basically give you the house, or you know, give you the house, or yes, okay, they give you the house. But understand that the banks themselves put no money up. All they put is a ledger and a book, and that is wrong.
Right.
And that is our banking system. So you know, it's really the value of things that is changing. You know, we could say we, even though we can we exchange, you know, property for wealth. That's why our money is, let's say, for our house. But understand that money itself has value behind it because it was from blood and sweat and tears that we got it. Now, the banks don't have that. They never did that. And that's funny. That's the way the banking system is. Like I said, if the banks actually take that money and loan it out to people, but it's worthless. The banks tell the Treasury Department, oh, I need $1 billion so I can put it in circulation. What they do is the Treasury Department will print $1 billion, and they'll give it to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve will give it out, let's say, in loans and so forth, and they own property or that own property
well,
for that money, which is the ledger.
No, but what
happened?
No, those banks, they may have $1 billion, but they're allowed to lend, $9 or $10 billion. Okay.
All right, you're right there, Leo. But see, you got to understand that first $1 billion, it costs them nothing. And they get in return $1 billion of printed money from the Treasury Department. Now, the Treasury Department is held responsible, you know, for, let's say, the $1 billion that we're giving out to the banks. But the banks own it.
Why, George,
they loan it out and also make money on it.
And, George, that's why all this hype in Washington is nothing but hype and rhetoric about how much we're in debt. Because you have to have debt to have money. And if you don't have debt, In this system, there's no money.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why this whole thing about, oh, we're going bankrupt, all the debt is so high, they don't get it.
They don't get it. If we, you know, we are bankrupt.
If we didn't have debt, we wouldn't have any money.
That's right.
And it's based on having debt.
The more debt you have...
They're being called on it. They're being called, that illusion is being called out, and they have to express themselves or explain their illusion.
But these Tea Party momos and all these other people, they just don't understand this, you know, that this is how it operates. And without that, there's no money, all right? So, you know, that's the way it goes. We got 45 seconds left to live stream here, so if anybody wants to continue to hear what we're saying, they can call 646-915-9505 and listen to us or join us.
For the next few minutes.
Yeah. So, but George, we want to wrap it up here. How do you want to leave it with people? I'm looking forward to Wednesday right now to see what happens. If I feel differently on Wednesday. Yeah.
It's funny how you know it correlates, I think, with the Christian beliefs with Ash Wednesday. We're in a period of the Lenten period for Christians, and you know it's a sober time where we actually look at the look at ourselves and look at the things that we've done, and actually change our view. But get ready for you know something to come out of this, and it's just a time, and I'm just saying it's a time that we normally express or experience every year, and it's the start of this ninth wave, which will be the start of this ninth wave of connecting our emotional body with our way of life and for this co-creation process that I've talked about. Now, the co-creation process is a process of the unity consciousness that we all connect to and we all experience the same thing, or we can experience the same thing, but we also can produce that.
So is Wednesday Ash Wednesday?
Yes.
Yes.
It is. So Wednesday coming is the beginning of the ninth wave, but it's also Ash Wednesday.
Interesting how all those things coincide, George.
Yeah. But
it's a time or it's a time that we could focus in on, and it's a time that we normally experience, and it's on those things that humans adapt themselves to, and if nothing, the energies of our position, you know, our Earth's position in the sun and the movements of the sun. So, you know, it's connected with other means, just like the blue moon. You know, a blue moon is rare, you know, a blue moon signifies, you know, a change of things, like the Native Americans believe. But, you know, I don't really want to get into that. But, you know, it's a time that's focused on. So, you know,
I think we all are. We all have a little different vision of what's going to happen, or we see it in different ways. But nonetheless, we all agree that there's going to be a change.
And something's going to happen.
And, well, it's changing right now, but I think the fulfillment of those changes will be expressed a little more powerfully in our lives than it normally is in let's say, in this week's leading up to this. And, I think Wisconsin is just one example of what we're experiencing in America with our legal system. And, you know, it's not the last. We'll have much more. And, you know, it's like the Middle East. You know, it's going to be like a wildfire. And, you know, Libya is just one state. There's other states over there, you know, that must come to, they must raise themselves up. Iran is another one, you know. Understand that these people are not religious fanatics. But they have a religious belief that must manifest itself because the thought itself has been building for years, and you know it's the holy jihad that people are looking to manifest. The holy jihad is good. It, you know, a lot of people think it's bad. It's not bad. It can be bad, but it's the fight for what is right, what's wrong, and it's part of the salvation that they've been striving for. Just like the Christian coming of Christ, it's a salvation that we prayed for. So, you know, it's got to manifest itself, but, you know, it just doesn't manifest itself in a little bit here, a little bit there. Now it's the start of something that will start here, but it's like a fire. You know, it's gonna start to spread. And I just hope that we're able to contain this fire and peacefully and, you know, move to our new way. And a new way is the unity consciousness, understand it. We're all in this together.
Well, it'd be nice if everybody understood that, and I hope that's the understanding that everybody comes away with.
I think you will, Lila. I really do.
I hope so.
But give peace a chance. Like I say, you know, pay it forward. And, you know, I've always believed that. And there was a movie out a while on that. But, you know, it's taking the goodness of our heart and expressing it, and we'll get it back. But instead of waiting for somebody to smile, you smile at them. And it's something that we have and we can. And what can I say?
Okay. Well, I guess we can say goodnight.
Yeah, it sounds good.
We've kind of come full circle, and we'll talk more about unity consciousness
next time we get together. We'll be right in the middle of
that. And we'll be in the middle of that, and we'll see how we're all feeling.
All right.
There you go, guys.
And what changes we miss. And yeah. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and I hope our listeners do too. And we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. God be with you, folks.
Okay. Right. Good night, George.
Good night, George.
And good night, folks. Thanks
for joining us. Yeah.
Have you with us tonight, and I hope you come back and are with us Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week.
Yeah. And with that, enough said, and we will be. Get it out here.